Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Word came through in an email that read, "We regret to inform you that your National Endowment for Humanities grant has been terminated." Humanities programs in all 50 states, including Ohio, received the same email. State Humanity Councils were established by Congress about 50 years ago to get the National Endowment for Humanities funds out of Washington, D.C. and into the hands of smaller communities and organizations. Ohio Humanities redistributes their share of the money as smaller grants for museum exhibitions, children's events at historic sites, and oral history projects across the state. Rebecca Asmo is Executive Director of Ohio Humanities. Welcome to All Sides, Rebecca.
Thank you, Amy.
So people may think they know what the term humanities means, but can you define it from the Ohio Humanities perspective?
Yeah, so officially, the humanities are the academic disciplines that study the human condition. And that can include history, philosophy, ethics, comparative religion, you know, really this long list of college majors. But at Ohio Humanities, the way that we describe it is stories that spark conversation and inspire ideas.
Now, did you have any warning that the Trump administration's Department of Government Efficiency, known as DOGE, would be targeting the National Endowment for the Humanities? Did you know this was coming?
So we heard rumors starting on about March 28th from staff at the National Endowment for the Humanities that members of the DOGE team were at their offices in Washington, D.C., and information was slowly trickling out that they were proposing significant cuts. But we didn't have any information confirmed until we received these notifications in the middle of the night on really the early morning hours of April 3rd, 2025.
And that's a day now that will live in infamy for you, I guess.
Correct, yes.
How much of your budget is made up of federal funding?
So for Ohio Humanities, it currently makes up 90% of our operating budget.
90.
Yes.
Wow.
And a couple of years ago, it was almost 100% of our budget, although that since I have started in the executive director role, that is a number that we have been working really hard to diversify in a variety of different ways.
Okay, well, we can talk about that diversity, but have you talked at all to maybe some donors or even the state? Have you talked about the need to help you make up this lost funding? Is the state willing to help?
Yeah, so we have actually been in conversation with members of the Ohio General Assembly for several years because Ohio is one of only 10 states in the entire country where the state legislature does not fund its state humanities council. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues was we had never asked the state legislature for funding. And because of that, Ohio ranks 49th out of 50 states and the District of Columbia in per capita funding for the public humanities. So me and my team, we've been working really hard with our public humanities partners throughout the state to educate the state legislature and also really just to educate our partners throughout the state about this gap in funding. And so we have been talking about this to the state legislature for a long time, and we are working on this in the current state budget process. And, you know, we're getting some really good feedback about that. And, you know, we are hopeful that as we go through this process, we have a proposed amendment for some funding that would support a grant program that would target history organizations that are really specifically outside of major metro areas, because those organizations are especially underserved by our federal re-grant program.
So your website right now shows in red print that grants are affected. The mm-hmm. Spark grant and the Ignite grant applications have been postponed until further notice, mm-hmm. it says. What were these grant programs, Spark and Ignite?
Yeah, so the largest portion of Ohio Humanities budget goes to grant programs. And we have two types of grants, just to keep it very simple. Spark grants, and those deadlines were about every other month, and organizations could request up to $5,000. And those grants were designed to be very easy. The deadlines came frequently, so that if you
had an idea,
idea, or if you needed to plan for something, you could quickly come in and get a quick answer on those grants. And then the Ignite grants were for larger projects up to $20,000. And for both of those grant opportunities, you could submit a draft, you could work with our grant officers, they would give you feedback. And that's really important, because especially for smaller organizations and organizations that might not have professional fundraising staff, you get a lot of support from the Ohio Humanities team, so that you can really get that grant application right and ensure that you can get funding that you need for your project.
Now, one of your programs from last year highlighted Lincoln School Marchers, Black women and children in Hillsborough, Ohio, who marched every day to school to be let into a white school. It was following the Brown versus Board of Education ruling. They were turned away every day, and for 2 years they marched. It was one of the longest sustained actions of the civil rights movement. We featured it on All Sides, and it was a piece of history that many of us had never heard of. Is that the goal of Ohio Humanities? Do you try to find the untold stories? Is that something your organization strives to do?
Absolutely. So while grant making is the biggest part of our operation, there are so many untold and undertold stories in Ohio, and we know that we are an organization that has the capacity, the network, the relationships, and also the capital from this government support that we have to be able to tell these stories that might otherwise be lost to history. And the Lincoln School story is a great example of that. So, you know, most Americans really think about the Montgomery bus boycott as being the official start of the civil rights movement. But nobody knew that a full year before that, in Hillsborough, Ohio, at the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, there was this group of women and children that were marching every single day. And they did that, you know, all the way through the Montgomery bus boycott and for months after the Montgomery bus boycott. And it was a significant story that really, you know, Ohio should be very proud of. We should be owning that story. And so, you know, we are fortunate to be able to have the capacity to amplify stories like that, these extraordinary Ohio stories, you know, about our history, our culture, our people. The Lincoln School Marchers is one example of that. But there are so many others from, you know, the Civil War, you know, stories about Holocaust survivors and their families here in Ohio, that are so important that we tell from the perspective of the people who experience those stories.
You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about federal funding cuts with Rebecca Asmo, Executive Director of Ohio Humanities. Now, we mentioned those Spark grants and Ignite grants. Are you able to continue some programming this year? Was it, or did you lose money that was currently a part of this operating year? I'm not sure when the checks are cut, you know?
Yeah. So the letter that we received, it really cut off funding effective immediately. So we received that email in the early morning hours of April 3rd, and it was terminating funding effective April 2nd. And I won't go into all the wonky details of how the government is funding or is funded, but it essentially cut off funding for the current continuing resolution, because the government we're about halfway through fiscal year of 25 for the federal government, which is being funded on a continuing resolution. So Ohio Humanities receives about $1.6 million per year from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And I want to point out that that's only about 14 cents per year per Ohioan. So, you know, it's a very small amount of money. And so, you know, we are owed in the contract that we have, that we are appropriated by Congress about $800,000 on that contract. So one thing about Ohio Humanities is that we have been very good financial stewards of our organization. And we do have an endowment. It's not a large endowment, but it's an endowment. And we do have cash reserves of non-federal funds that we have been able to build up. Now, that doesn't mean we can just spend those down, but that does give us some ability to fight what is an illegal grant termination. And so we can kind of talk about the details of that and also figure out how do we begin to resume services to the public humanities sector? Because at the end of the day, who's really hurt most by this? Well, yes, Ohio Humanities is hurt. It's really the organizations who are serving, you know, local communities all throughout Ohio. And then the ultimate goal that we need to think about is how do we build a more resilient sector that can respond to what we know are going to be challenges over the next few years and, you know, build a more resilient sector long term? Because over the past 50 years, you know, we haven't built a, you know, resilient public humanities sector, local history sector that, you know, is able to respond to this moment that we're in right now.
Now, you've been in contact as recently as this week with the Office of Federal State Partnerships. Is that what you're saying? That you, tell me about that office and like what you're learning from them. Yeah.
Yes. So the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts were both formed in the mid-60s, around 1965. And then in the early 70s, this Fed-State partnership was formed because Congress and it was the Nixon administration at the time said, you know, hey, we know that this money is getting, it's staying in Washington or it's staying in big institutions like in large universities on the coast. And we know that it needs to get back to the congressional districts. So Congress passed a law, it was signed by the president, that said we're going to create these state humanities councils and state arts councils. And a percentage of this money, 40% of this money that gets appropriated to the national endowments needs to go back to the states so that it can get to the congressional districts. So I say that because it's important to note that the humanities councils, the arts councils, we are statutorily mandated in law to receive this funding.
You exist because Congress said that each state should have one.
Yeah. Congress said that. And at the same time, in the appropriation, when Congress appropriates these funds, they specifically appropriate funding for the state councils. And so we are unique compared to other federal government grants in that this funding is given by law. It's not just a contract that's given by a federal agency.
So are all the humanities councils joining together? Are you going to sue? Is that the action?
We are in conversation with states' attorneys generals and also with some firms about the right path to take on that. And so I can't answer exactly what the strategy will be today. But we do have a team that's working on that.
No. So eventually, do you think that the entire department, the National Endowment for the Humanities, will it still exist? Do you know?
Well, we had a call yesterday and, you know, a significant percentage of the staff at the National Endowment for the Humanities you know, has been put on leave and have received RIF notices. We have been told that there is still a plan to have an Office of Fed-State Partnership, and there is still a plan for there to be state councils. However, we have been told that DOGE disagrees with the percentage of funding that Congress you know, has mandated that we should of funding that we should receive. So there's just a lot that we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know about what will happen with funding for fiscal year 2025. And at the same time, we're also advocating for, to Congress and the Appropriations Committee for funding for fiscal year 2026. And also at the same time, talking to state legislators and private donors. So all of us across the country are really fighting on multiple fronts right now. And also thinking about, historically we've had this model of operation, and is that something that, should be reimagined, as we just think about this, just really this new environment that we're operating in.
Well, right. And in the minute we have left, I'm sure you don't know, the exact answer, but you mentioned diversifying the way that you're funded, and you mentioned asking the state for money. But what's next at this moment? Are you trying to just, I'm sure you have people who work for you who are probably pretty worried.
Yeah, I mean, so this certainly is concerning. This is an unprecedented attack on cultural funding. And full stop. And that is concerning. And the cultural sector is a huge driver of the economy. And that's really important to state. But this is also an attack on our cultural memory and our cultural identity as Americans. And so those are very important points to make. But I do also want to add that I am very optimistic, because I know that Americans and Ohioans, these institutions are very important to them. Museums, libraries, documentary films, these are things that Americans and Ohioans love. And the response that I've seen, the offers of support, the contributions that we're seeing, the willingness to advocate has been tremendous. And so I believe that we have an opportunity to come out of this stronger, and if we're smart about this. And so, I sit here today optimistic and ready to fight and ready to work really hard. And so I'm glad to have the opportunity to be here today. And I hope that all of the listeners here, will reach out to our organization and, join us in this fight and, walk alongside of us.
Thank you, Rebecca Asmo, Executive Director of Ohio Humanities. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk about library funding, which is changing at the state and federal level. And that's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. If you need a visual to understand how much Ohioans love their libraries, consider this. The number of users in any given year would fill Ohio State's entire football stadium, the Shoe, more than 400 times over. So budget changes at the state level and cuts at the federal level will be directly felt by all library patrons. At the time when public libraries are providing more services than ever, joining us now is Michelle Francis, Executive Director of the Ohio Library Council, which represents the interests of Ohio's public libraries. Welcome to All Sides, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Amy.
So traditionally, how have public libraries been funded? Can you give us like a percentage breakdown on what comes from the federal level, what's from the state budget, and then libraries do have local resources too?
So for Ohio, we are very different from other states. In other states, with the exception of Hawaii, public libraries are generally under city or county government. But many, many, many years ago, Ohio's General Assembly decided to do things a little bit differently. And so in Ohio, we are separate political subdivisions. So what that means is that the majority of our funding is actually divided between the state and local communities. So if you add up all of the funding for public libraries that they receive from either the state or through a local property tax levy, on average, about 51% comes from the state and about 49% would come from a local property tax levy. So the majority is either state and local funding. It's not necessarily as much from the federal level. Some libraries do receive grants from the federal government through the IMLS, but primarily it is state funding. And I will say, too, we have some public libraries. We have 48 systems that do not have a local property tax levy. So out of our 251 public library systems, 48 of them have nothing but their state funding. I mean, they may have donations here and there, right? But primarily the majority of their funding comes from the state.
Is that because they've never levied a property tax or they can't?
It depends on that local situation. We have some library systems that are in areas where the property values are low and there's just not a lot of support or the ability to generate local property tax, right?
It wouldn't work, yeah.
It wouldn't work for them. So, and in others, they listen to the community. I mean, our libraries are good listeners when it comes to their local community. And so, but I will say, if you look at the local property tax levies for public libraries, on average, it's only usually around a mill. Like, it's a very small millage amount. It's not,
you're not saying $1 million, you're saying a mill.
One mill, sorry. One mill. So, because that's how we measure property taxes in Ohio.
So, but let's zero in for a second on what's happening at the federal level. Because President Trump issued an executive order that impacts federal museum and library grants. So the move is to eliminate the Institute of Museum and Library Services. So you're saying that won't directly impact maybe a significant portion of budgets of libraries in Ohio, but it does impact the grants, right? If they wanted to get a federal grant to maybe build something or a bigger project?
It would. And actually, I think overall, Ohio receives about $5.4 million from IMLS. That is funneled through the State Library of Ohio. They are essentially the state agency that the grants flow through. And so, but those grants go to help to pay multiple things. There are individual grants that will do all sorts of things, but some of those that are in particular right now, there was a program called Guiding Ohio Online, which basically put digital literacy coaches, people who helped people, especially in rural areas with digital literacy, right? We're in the technology age. And unfortunately, we're still we're still at a point where not everyone has access to broadband. And for many of our rural library systems, they actually utilize those grants to have coaches and staff to pay for positions that would help people with it. We still have people who have issues and aren't comfortable getting an email address or, you know, things like that. And so, or technology questions. And so those grants help to pay for that staffing for that individual. And as of right now, those positions are gone.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's hard to pay bills or like do a lot of different things in life without an email address nowadays. So, you're saying that those grants are gone. So positions had to have been cut.
There are from some of our libraries that already had those positions, they have suspended those positions or eliminated them for those that receive that grant.
You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about library funding with Michelle Francis, Executive Director of the Ohio Library Council. So turning to the state for a minute, libraries are being debated now in the state budget. Governor DeWine, in his proposed budget, raised the percentage of the general revenue funds going to the Ohio Public Library Fund. The House Republicans' budget cut the library funding and created a line item with a set amount. And then after a lot of public outcry, the House did end up restoring the public library fund. I mean, this must have been quite a moment for you whenever you saw the House budget, because we all know things about Governor DeWine and we know he loves his libraries. So, yeah,
let me start by just saying, you know, the support from Governor DeWine and Mrs. DeWine in support of public libraries and being champions of literacy is we've never seen that. And it's absolutely amazing to see the leadership in the state of Ohio realize and know the importance of reading and how it really is the key to everything. It's the key to success. It's the key to school. It's the key to everything. Mm-hmm. And so to have them as champions is pretty amazing. And so, the past 2 weeks have been an absolute roller coaster. I'm not going to lie. It's been kind of crazy. And so I will say one thing. I would not say that the House restored the public library fund.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah. Explain the nuance there, because it's now a line item appropriation, which is not the preferred option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the state budget is a process. You know, the governor introduces his version, and then it goes to the House, and the House passes their version, and then we go to the Senate, and we start all over again, and then we go to conference committee in June, and then the governor still has an opportunity to line item veto provisions. And so this is a process. And so Ohio's public libraries have had a partnership with the state for almost 100 years, where we have received that state funding. And that's a very important partnership, because if you go to any local community in Ohio, really, the public libraries are the crown jewel in the center of the community. They are a community center for all Ohioans. And so, you know, I know you referenced our library visits just a few minutes ago from 2023. Mm-hmm. We literally just got data in for 2024.
Yeah.
In 2023, we had 44.6 million visits. In 2024, we had 48 million. So in 1 year, that has increased by over 3 million. And so our libraries are busier than they've ever been. So this partnership with the state is incredibly important for us. Now, the governor did propose raising that PLF percentage, which is a percentage of state tax receipts. Mm-hmm. It's a partnership. It's just like the local government fund that go to townships, counties, and cities. Ours is specifically for public libraries. But that partnership has been around for a long time. The governor did propose a slight increase, which we greatly appreciate, because if you look at the amount we received in 2024, it was the same amount we received 25 years ago from the state.
Oh.
So, yeah, exactly, right? You remember Y2K? I remember Y2K.
Okay.
So
the internet was very different back then.
Yeah,
too.
The internet was very different back then. We're doing things now we were definitely not doing back in.
I'm thinking all libraries need more computers now than they did in Y2K.
Well, yeah. More computers and more money for ebooks and audiobooks and all these things that our library patrons are doing today. Mm-hmm. So, but with that percentage, the House took a different approach. They did make it a line item. The public library fund language is in the bill if you look at it, but they changed it from a partnership to a line item.
And so instead of it being a set percentage in the budget, it now could be, well, they will pick a number out of the sky.
They will pick a number out of the sky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's conversations, but every 2 years we come before the General Assembly. We share what's happening in our public libraries. We talk about how we are saving taxpayer money, how we are returning money to Ohioans. I mean, yesterday was tax day, right? April 15th. And so our libraries have been very busy the past couple of weeks helping people file their taxes. In particular, if you look at the Cincinnati-Hamilton County Public Library, last year they helped over 1,200 people file their taxes. They saved them over $1 million and got them refunds. I mean, that's pretty huge. So I think those are just a few examples of what our libraries are doing today. And if you go into any public library, you'll see all sorts of things. You may see a homeschool group. You may see a Boy Scout troop doing some kind of a project. You may see an early literacy program. You may see a program for senior citizens on Social Security 101. That's actually been very popular lately because a lot of people have questions about Social Security. You may see a knitting group, a community knitting group. So there's all sorts of things that are happening in our public libraries. And I'll just share one that it's just a really interesting story because it really does talk about lifelong learning opportunities and what our libraries are doing. We had a library this past Saturday do a life skills program, and it was targeted for teenagers on how to take care of your car, how to change the oil, how to change a tire, these basic life skills that maybe people don't know today. It was overwhelming. They didn't have enough spots for people to participate in the program. And so I was checking online this morning, and they're already talking about having the speaker and the retired teacher come back and do that program again because there's such a demand. And there was such a demand not just for a program specifically for teenagers, but also for adults and others who want to learn how to just take care of your car.
I could certainly use that. Yeah. The libraries rallied around this whole state funding issue. The Columbus Metropolitan Library set up a microphone and asked patrons to whisper why they love libraries. Let's listen to that.
I love story time and I love reading books. And that's all.
I like all the experience that it has put me through.
Because it's interactive with other kids.
It's so creative.
Because I like books.
I moved here in 1968. I remember using the library when I was a little girl, and I'm in my 60s.
I love the library because it's a great place to come think, pull your thoughts together. Love y'all.
Now, during the House funding debate about libraries, Republican Representative Jack Daniels had a suggestion, and I wanted to get your take on it. Let's listen to his suggestion.
There are 251 library systems with 481 branch locations for a total of 732 library outlets or buildings. I think it's time to start talking about consolidation. I think it's time to start taking that word seriously.
So what about consolidation? I mean, is that possible? Because you're talking about how libraries are a part of particular communities, mm-hmm. but tell me about consolidation.
So the discussion of consolidation is not new in the state of Ohio. There was a larger discussion around consolidation well over 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago in a previous administration. And it wasn't just targeted at libraries. It was focused on schools and other local governments as well. So there was a study done many, many years ago. And so what I would say as far as consolidation, our libraries are already amazing stewards of taxpayer dollars. They collaborate. They work across county lines, across city lines, across their local districts, townships, et cetera. Because of that collaboration, because we receive state funding, Ohio is actually looked at as the example nationally for shared services and drawing down those dollars and not duplicating those dollars. So that way they go much further. And so, you know, we have a lot of consortia in the state of Ohio where libraries work together. You're going to get to hear, I think, from Sandy in a little bit, and she's a part of one of those. And so by sharing those resources already because of our state funding, there is already a significant amount of savings that is being returned to taxpayers right now. And I would say that with the state funding we receive, you can go to any part of the state of Ohio and get services, regardless of where you live. So we live here in Columbus, but if I'm in Ashtabula County for the day, I can go to any Ashtabula library within that county and get services and not have to pay.
I can scan my library card in a different county?
Well, okay. I wouldn't say you can necessarily scan your card, but they will provide you. They may give you a new library card for that county.
Okay.
But you can go anywhere. If I'm in Hamilton County this afternoon, I can get services. Mm-hmm. If I'm in Defiance County this afternoon, I can get services. If you were in another state, because they are primarily funded at the local level through city or county government, if you go outside of that jurisdiction, you have to pay for services. And in Ohio, we don't do that because of the state funding.
Okay. Well, Republican Representative Brian Stewart, during that House budget discussion that I mentioned, he said that they increased funding by $7 million and had allocated just shy of $1 billion to the library. And then he said, quote, more than any other state in America. So is that true?
Well, again, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Ohio is different from other states, with the exception of Hawaii, because they are one statewide system. Yes, we do receive a significant amount in comparison to other states, because in other states, the public library is a line item under city or county government. If you go to New York, the New York Public Library is absolutely amazing, but they get their funding through the mayor's office. And so they don't.
So he's not comparing apples to apples.
Correct.
I see.
Not an apples to apples comparison. And I will say, you know, the comment about almost a billion dollars or whatever over the biennium, that's not anything new. It's actually less than what we've got in previous years. So any snapshot in time that you want to look at, if you add up how much we have received last year or even the year before over the biennium, it's still already currently at close to $1 billion over the biennium, which is actually an extremely, extremely small part of the overall budget.
So before we take the break, just in the case of lobbying right now, you know, lawmakers are on a recess, mm-hmm. and we have the way it's a line item instead of the percentage in the House budget that went to the Senate. So are you going to be lobbying to the Senate asking for it to be restored to the way it was before?
We are going to be asking the Senate to restore the governor's proposal, mm-hmm. which is 1.75% of the general revenue fund. And I will say, I do want to take a minute, if I can, and just mm-hmm. thank library patrons, because, you know, you shared the clip earlier from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Absolutely moving the stories from our patrons about the services that they receive right now from their public libraries and their love for public libraries. Those are real. That's really what's happening in our public libraries today. And I just want to thank them, because tens of thousands of them reached out to Ohio House members to share their stories, their personal stories, not a form letter, personal stories of the impact of their public library on their lives.
And Michelle Francis is going to stay with us. And coming up, we're going to travel to southern and the eastern part of the state to a rural library in Harrison County and to an Athens-based history center. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about federal cuts to the humanities and to libraries. We spent the first part of the show talking at a macro look at the issue. Now we're going to visit southern and eastern parts of Ohio to talk with two women who know what it's like to provide programming and services to Appalachia. Jessica Siders is executive director of the Southeast Ohio History Center based in Athens. Welcome to All Sides, Jessica.
Thank you, Amy.
And Sandy Thomas is the director of the Puskarik Public Library System in Harrison County, where she manages library locations in Cadiz, Freeport, and Scio. Welcome to All Sides, Sandy.
Thank you, Amy.
And still with us in the studio is Michelle Francis, executive director of the Ohio Library Council. Thanks for staying here, Michelle.
No problem.
Now, Sandy, I wanted to start with you. I read that the history of your library dates back to 1880, when a group of residents decided to form a library. Now, of course, the location has changed over time, but it's an anchor in your community. Can you give us an idea of who your library serves?
Our library is fortunate to be able to serve all ages. We have, you know, baby story times. We have pickleball in our local community center that the library owns for our seniors. We work with Silver Sneakers. We work with OSU Extension and have Zumba for our younger folks, and as well as always providing the traditional services, you know, with books and audiobooks and all of the materials that people expect in a traditional library setting.
Yeah, whenever I read that you have pickleball and Zumba and all of these different activities, you seem more like a community center in addition to being a library. Do you feel that way?
We absolutely are. Our community only has a little over 14,000 folks in our whole county. So the services that you would normally find in some of the larger areas are just not here in Southeast Ohio. So being that something for everyone is so very, very important in our rural areas, and our libraries really fill that role.
Now, when you heard about, you know, there's different funding cuts happening, obviously, at the federal level, and then there were changes to the state budget of what the governor proposed versus what the House is proposing. When you hear about this idea of cutting library money, what does that mean to you at an on-the-ground level in Harrison County?
Well, for us, so many essential services. Our library is part of a consortium, something that naturally has occurred in our collaborative efforts to save money and make the most of every dollar that we are given. We are part of the SEO consortium provided by the state library, and the IMLS federal cuts would directly affect that service. We would lose parts of the functionality of our catalog that could be affected, as well as staff members that maintain and troubleshoot the issues for us. So it really would leave our services directly impacted here for our patrons and our residents.
Now, Michelle Francis, this is related to what you were talking about in the last segment by saying that the federal funds are used in certain areas. Is mm-hmm. that what Sandy's talking about?
Yes. Yeah, so the SEO consortia that is managed by the State Library of Ohio, mm-hmm. It really is that's one of the resources for that funding is through IMLS.
We are talking about the impact of funding cuts on smaller libraries in Ohio with Sandy Thompson, the director of the Puskarich Public Library System in Harrison County. And then also with us is Jessica Siders, Executive Director of the Southeast Ohio History Center based in Athens. So Jessica, turning to you, earlier in the hour, we started by talking with Ohio Humanities, and I wanted to talk with you about some of your on-the-ground work. As Executive Director of the Southeastern Ohio History Center, how do these federal cuts to the humanities impact what you do at your organization each day?
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. I just want to share a little bit about how we have partnered with Ohio Humanities in the past. Mm-hmm. For us, funding through Ohio Humanities, which receives its funding through the National Endowment for the Humanities, that funding really gives us the ability to collaborate with experts in our community that we don't have available on our staff. And it also gives us the opportunity to innovate and do kind of out of the box things. So as an example, I wrote my first Ohio Humanities grant in 2013. It was for less than $2,000. And that grant helped us to partner with our local public library to host a community photography workshop where we encouraged participants to take their cameras and document areas of their communities that were important to them, ordinary places, ordinary people. And then we would bring the participants back and they would select photographs, and then we put it on an exhibit at our library and at the History Center. So we got an exhibit out of it, and we got great community engagement with our participants and the libraries. We've also partnered with Ohio Humanities to do exhibits at the History Center. So in 2018, we wanted to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the founding of an asylum in Athens. And the funding we received allowed us to partner with an Athens-based scholar named Catherine Ziff to develop an exhibit and a six-month speaker series on the history of mental health treatment, as well as how that history is still visible on our local landscape with the example of a really iconic building in Athens.
I'm sure you have diversified sources of funding, but when you come up with an idea and you want to do the idea and get a grant, that's when you partner with the Ohio Humanities. So this this loss of funding is going to impact maybe a new idea that you come up with. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. None of the small museums in our region are relying on Ohio Humanities for our daily operations. We just can't do that. But when we do come up with something innovative, or even if it's just a speaker, bringing a speaker to our museum, that's something that we can partner with Ohio Humanities to do, to bring experts to a small part of the state where we might not get people with, you know, a lot of expertise in a particular area.
Now, you were counting on a grant for a new initiative. It was a permanent exhibit for fourth graders. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So again, looking at very specific projects, we've been working over the last 3 years to develop a permanent exhibit on the history of Southeast Ohio as a region. We want to tell our region's story and also celebrate the fact that Southeast Ohio is where Ohio began, and hopefully use that exhibit to instill a little bit of community pride, but also remind the rest of the state that we have really significant history here, and it's worthy of being preserved. So we were initially approaching Ohio Humanities to develop teacher resources for this exhibit so that teachers from around the region would have the curriculum laid out for them. They could see which standards for fourth grade that exhibit meets and plan their visits to the History Center. A lot of schools in our region can't afford to go to some of the big museums in Columbus, but it's an easier ask to get them to come someplace like Athens, especially if we partner with other museums so that they can hit two museums in one day.
Hmm. Now, back to libraries for a minute with Sandy Thompson. In the lower level of your library, there's the Harrison County History of Coal Museums, and it preserves the rich mining history of your area. How do you pay for an exhibit like that?
We currently actually have that underneath of the library funding here, that it's just another service at our library. We actually have speakers. We have a coal miners reunion that we host in May. We have guided tours where you can actually pick up a piece of history and hold the electric cable that weighs, we have a section that's about a foot long, and it's what powered the large silver spade shovel in our area that was responsible for a lot of the surface mining here. And there's also underground mining that we pay homage to there. And we have films of actual footage of pony mines that were also here. And some of them also are from Southeast Ohio and different mining companies from around.
Now, in 2023, I saw you were named Librarian of the Year, and you were cited for bringing small-town sensibility and cutting-edge technology skills. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you so much, Amy.
Can you tell me about the technology part? How important is your library? Are there people in your area without proper internet who need to come to the library for your help?
Yes, we help people with their technology needs at the library every day, whether it's someone that is having difficulty FaceTiming their grandchild in California, or helping someone to get online and fill out a job application. We helped a gentleman just the other day get his VA benefits, and then we arranged travel for his physician visits. I think that the library is that one place where we make technology so much more appealing to helping folks come in and answer their questions. They're not afraid to come into libraries. They know that we are here to help them. We are that friendly face, that open door. And we also have the hotspots to help folks that have internet difficulties at home, and 24/7 Wi-Fi, where we have folks using our parking lots all day and all night for internet access as well.
And Jessica Siders, in just the 2 minutes we have left, from the Southeast Ohio History Center, can you talk a little bit about how having these smaller history centers benefits the community? Because like you said, not everyone can take a bus trip all the way to Columbus or the Ohio History Center. So it's not just telling the story of your town, but it's just access to history.
That's right. And I would say that we need to do a better job as a field of expressing the fact that history isn't just something nice to have. Like, oh, isn't it nice that we have this historic house down the road from us? But it's essential to understanding who we are. Who we are and where we come from, those are usually the first sparks that people have when they become interested in history. It's understanding where their families come from, and then the history of their local community. But I would also say that the work that we do as history organizations across the state, all of us are, we're the keepers of awesomes that people can interact with. So kids from Jackson, Ohio, can see parts of their community here in the History Center, or they can come, they can go to museums in their communities and see real things that are from their community's past. That's an experience that I think leaves an imprint on you as a kid. And it also teaches us, you know, critical thinking skills, critical skills that we use not just in, you know, our social studies classes, but in everyday life. Looking at multiple sources, judging the validity of sources, and verifying facts. I think these are all skills that museums and history organizations teach.
Well, I want to say thank you to Jessica Siders, Executive Director of the Southeast Ohio History Center based in Athens. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
And thank you to Librarian Sandy Thompson, Director of the Puskerich Public Library System in Harrison County. Thank you, Sandy.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Amy. Thank you.
And also thank you, of course, to Michelle Francis, Executive Director of the Ohio Library Council. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
This has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.